during this program. Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Now, here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week, we'll look back on highlights from the recent Families USA Health Action 2012 conference featuring United States Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin, former Congressman Bob Edgar, former Clinton White House senior staffer Bob Weiner, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. Joined now by Dr. Regina Benjamin, the United States Surgeon General. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
As we sit here today at Families USA's Health Action Now conference, what's your top priority in 2012?
Prevention is the foundation of my work as Surgeon General, and so everything I do has to do with prevention. One of the areas of the Affordable Care Act was that it established a National Prevention Council, which is made up of 17 cabinet-level members, all focused on prevention, and I have the honor to chair that council. We've been looking at prevention throughout government as well as throughout the country. We have an advisory group, a presidentially appointed advisory group to help advise us. And this past summer, we came out with the National Prevention Strategy. And if we follow the recommendations in that strategy, we can decrease or possibly prevent the five leading causes of death.
Could you share some of those points in the strategy for our listeners?
Yes, the strategy is basically has... The goal is to increase the number of Americans who are healthy at every stage of life. We want to move the way we think about health in this country and healthcare from a focus on sickness and disease to a focus on wellness and prevention. We want to prevent people from getting sick in the first place. So health, we know, occurs not just in a doctor's office or the hospital, which is part of it does, but a big part occurs in where we live, where we work, where we play, and where we pray. It occurs in everything we do, so we have to incorporate health into our everyday lives. And that's one of the things that we're trying to promote, having Americans start to understand that health should be enjoyable, that you should enjoy it. It's not a negative thing. So the National Prevention Strategy has four basic pillars, if you will. One is empowering people, giving people the information and the tools to make good healthy choices and healthy decisions. Another one is healthy communities, making sure our communities are involved and encouraged at foster being healthy and giving them the information and the tools to help the communities. Another area is preventive and clinical services and preventive care and clinical services. As you know, the Affordable Care Act now requires insurance companies to cover preventive services like mammograms and pap smears and diabetes screenings, and the insurance companies can no longer charge a copay for that. So that in itself gives a number of people more access to these services. And then the last one is health disparities. We want to eliminate health disparities. So those are the basic four pillars of the strategy. And throughout that, we have a number of things we can do. We're going around the country in various regions trying to encourage people to adopt the prevention strategy. Many communities are. The city of Chicago has adopted it. A couple of cities in California and others are starting to make their own prevention strategies and getting people active and involved and becoming more healthy.
Dr. Benjamin, you know the old saying, you are what you eat.
Yes.
How does what we eat and how much that we eat fit into this strategy that you have?
One of our areas is active living and healthy eating. And we know that healthy eating is important. But we need to not focus on what we can't do, what we can't have. We need to start focusing on what we can do and what we can have and making it enjoyable. So giving people healthy options, you know, making healthy foods available and affordable, because when something says it's healthy, it costs more. We want to make it bring down those costs and make sure that they're available. When you go to when you're traveling and you're walking, you should be able to get healthy options just as easy as you can get unhealthy options.
So how do we make that a reality? How do you increase the number of healthy options that are available?
We're working with partners throughout the country. We're working with the industry, asking the food industry to make these available. We're working with companies that who want to please their customers, and so we're asking the customers, make your voices known that you want these healthy options, and the market will fill that. So trying to get everyone involved, everyone from the individual to the companies to the local leaders to local governments, everyone to involve, that health occurs everywhere we are.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Dr. Regina Benjamin, United States Surgeon General. Dr. Benjamin, one of your points in the strategy was healthy communities. How have you been able to rally people around the idea that not just themselves, but their entire communities need to focus on being healthy?
We're having, as I said, these regional meetings, and what we're seeing is we're having people from local government, state governments come together, community leaders, we're having community organizations come together, and we encourage others to start to join us to start to look at how I make my entire community healthier. We have the nonprofits are at the table. They're there. And when everyone starts to look at how can we be better as a community, everyone benefits, and you're seeing things happen. Things like as simple as a website that we developed, well, it's in at the one in Chicago, was Community Commons, where all these organizations can go and see where all these things are happening and put in what's happening so everyone knows. It's called Community Commons, just a little resource there that brings it all together. Having in California, for example, the mayor of Los Angeles made the parks smoke-free, outdoor parks smoke-free, and that benefits the community. It was a little controversial because it's outdoors, but if you want your kids to play and you want them to be able to play in a place that doesn't have a lot of cigarette butts, that people aren't smoking around them. So bringing those communities together.
What's your top piece of advice in terms of preventing sickness and disease?
The top thing is to take control of your own health. We in government, we in health care will try to give you good information, give you reliable information and tools to help you do that, but ultimately it's your decision to make that healthy choice, and we hope that you can make those healthy choices, and we're here to help. And the other thing is we're trying to become a more healthy and fit nation, and again, I want health to be fun, enjoyable, play, enjoy being with your kids and grandkids. We have an initiative I'm starting called Journey to Joy, meaning that we need to put the joy back into health. And it's not a negative thing. It's not a bad thing. You shouldn't dread being joyful. You should enjoy it.
It makes me think of that NFL Play 60 campaign,
yes,
right?
It's
something
like
along
that.
Those lines. It's fun to go out and play and enjoy the outdoors and get some exercise and activity.
Have a good time. And, you know, you don't have to. You can join a gym. You don't have to. You can just go outside and play. You can dance. You can dance with yourself in the mirror. Put on some good music and back or whatever age music you like and just dance and play with and enjoy yourself. Play with your kids. We need to find our own joy. What's joyful for you may be different from me. It may be that you want to run a marathon. Another person may want to fit in an old pair of jeans. And another person may just want to sit up long enough to play with their grandkids in the evening. So whatever it is that brings you joy when it comes to health, that's what we want you to find and then work towards that joy and enjoying it. And if you're happy and you get enough sleep and rest, those things all add to your health and the health of the community. And we in government, particularly with the Affordable Care Act, is trying to give you tools and opportunities to make that easier.
United States Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin, thank you for your time and your work on behalf of the American people.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll address campaign finance reform with former Congressman Bob Edgar.
Attention AFGE members. Are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more. Visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Bob Edgar. Bob is the former congressman from Pennsylvania, as well as the current president and CEO of Common Cause. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be back on your program.
And so let's talk a little bit about 2012 as we kick off the new year. What are some of your top priorities?
In this presidential year, we think that there's going to be a massive infusion of money in politics. We already have seen it in the Republican primaries with super PACs, and all of that plays back to 2 years ago when the Supreme Court, by a very narrow decision, 5-4, allowed corporations and labor unions to dip into their corporate treasury and spend those on independent expenditures to trash candidates or to support candidates they like. It changed law that had been in place since 1907. And Teddy Roosevelt was president of the United States, and he warned us against the corporatizing of America. And the Supreme Court, by this narrow decision, has made the presidential campaign year of 2012 the most moneyed, potentially the most moneyed election in our history. And I think the danger is that we either are going to be a nation that's of and by and for the people, or a nation that's of and by and for corporate America. And so Common Cause, at the top of our agenda, is to push back on Citizens United with a constitutional amendment program, not focused on Washington or inside the Beltway, but focused all across the country, getting city councils and county councils and state governments to pass instructions to their House and Senate members to put in place a constitutional amendment that has three components. Number one, corporations aren't people. Number two, money is not speech, and our founding fathers and mothers never intended money to be speech. Money can stifle speech. And number three, let's give our legislative bodies, whether at the state level or at the federal level, the ability to put in place public financing systems or other mechanisms to control the amount of money that's flooding into our system and moving us closer to a plutocracy than a democracy.
We've seen how politics has evolved over the years. Talk about the danger here of having money overrun politics. Talk about what the consequences are there.
Even before Citizens United, corporations could put money into political action committees and into campaigns. There was no problem before the Citizens United decision. But after the Citizens United decision, particularly in the debate around health care and the efforts to destroy the modest health care system that was put in place by this administration, lobbyists and special interest groups can taint the outcome. We always had lobbyists in Washington bringing their talking points, but now we have lobbyists bringing tons of money, and the elected officials are more interested in the money than they are in the talking points. And we at Common Cause believe that the Citizens United decision is going to impact so much in this year that we could see danger not only to health care, but to environmental legislation, to workers' rights legislation. Anything that comes before the Supreme Court is an issue that could be tainted by corporations buying and selling congressmen, placing them in committees and subcommittees. We have this fantasy cartoon in our head of 5 years from now, congressmen and senators sitting with suits that look much like race car drivers that have patches from Boeing and Bank of America and BP Oil Company, and they represent those interests rather than representing the people. We think that those patches need to be removed, and we need elected officials who, once elected, if they pledge to anything, they pledge to serve the interest of their constituents and of the public, and not of the special interest.
We are in an election year, so of course coming up later this year we'll be faced with some very critical decisions to make. How are you working to balance things out a little bit? We've obviously talked about this influence of money in politics. We are in an election year, as I noted. How are you working to fairly make things even out?
Common Cause is going to do a couple things. One, we're going to push back on the Citizens United decision. We've just launched this week a campaign called Amend 2012, which would amend the Constitution and say corporations aren't people and money isn't speech, and give the opportunity for controlling the amount of money spent in campaigns. Secondly, we're going to do something that will be quite controversial. We believe that the filibuster is unconstitutional. And so by hopefully mid-March, early April, we will file in the federal courts a federal lawsuit arguing that the filibuster is not in the Constitution. It's not part of the early framing of our government. The checks and balances that were in place by the founding fathers and English common law are sufficient. And the Senate should not have the power, with only 40 or 41 votes, to be able to block even the consideration of legislation. We think that's a serious charge. But this year, because it's a presidential year, one of the major things Common Cause is going to be doing is working on election protection. In 2008, we found someone in Virginia passing out literature that said because of the pressure of voting, Republicans vote on Tuesday and Democrats vote on Wednesday. The person was found, caught, taken to the police station, but because there were no laws in place in Virginia that made that a crime, they were released. In Philadelphia, we found people putting robocalls out that said, if you have a traffic ticket or haven't paid your child support, you will in fact be arrested at the polls, trying to hold down minority voters. We found in many colleges, they were telling college students that if your address on your driver's license didn't match the address on your voting registration, you were not permitted to vote. And the most terrible one we found was out in Colorado. There were robocalls into the Hispanic community saying, because of the pressure of voting, government's changed the rules, you can vote by phone, tell us who you're voting for, and don't come to the polls. We were smart enough then to hire Danny Glover, the actor, to do robocalls that went across in many of these communities and said, if you're getting robocalls to prevent you from going to vote, ignore them, go and vote, cast your vote. This is a free and fair elections. We think if this election is close, as it was in year 2000, it could in fact be tainted by inadequate voting machines, machines that could not be audited, and recounts could not take place, machines that don't have a paper trail. We're going to push back on that. And we're also going to try to educate people across the country to keep their eyes and ears open for these deceptive practices. Because in the controversies that have emerged from the far right to the far left, often political activists want to hold down particular segments of the population. And Common Cause, working with a coalition of all good government groups, wants to speak up, speak out, inform people through television, radio. So we're raising resources to do a constitutional amendment, to do the filibuster, and to do election protection.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with former Congressman Bob Edgar, the now president and CEO of Common Cause. Congressman, many people today say that Congress is broken. You've spent a number of years serving the American people. Do you think it's a problem? And if so, what would you do to fix it?
The first thing I want to push back on is something that was started well before the Reagan administration, that government is the enemy and we've got to get government off our back and out of our pocketbook. Government is of and by and for the people. If we want roads that work, if we want transportation systems to work, if we want libraries to work, if we want our senior citizens not to be on poverty, we need government. We need an efficient government. So I want to go and teach young adults to see serving in public service as part of a season of their life. I got elected to Congress by accident at age 31. Never been to a political meeting, had never taken a political science course. I was a minister. I was sitting at home on a Saturday night when former President Richard Nixon fired the special prosecutor looking into his the corruption issues of Watergate. One year later, I became a member of Congress. I went from being chairman of my son's parent-teachers organization to being a member of Congress. I want to see more of that activity happen. And once those persons are elected, I want them to do two pledges. First, a pledge to sign no other pledges. And second, to pledge that they will serve their constituents and not the special interest. And will work to find a way to fund elections so that congressmen and senators and people across the country are not beholden to the special interest. Another thing that I would want us to do as part of the reform of government is I think we need to find ways to encourage people to go into government, stay a season, it could be a long season, but not be afraid to recycle themselves. I think we have too many professional politicians who stay too long. Even the good guys and the good women get bored and stale after a while. I think the House of Representatives, for example, was intended to be the people's body, and they thought that congressmen would serve for a few years of service and then go do something else. I think we have some people who think they are entitled to be in public service and that they're the only ones that can represent their state or their districts. And there's a whole bunch of other reform efforts that I'd make. I should tell you that Common Cause was active over the last 4 years in taking away the power of drawing the lines for congressional districts and legislative districts in California. We took it away from the Democrats and Republicans, where the incumbents had drawn the lines for years to keep them in their incumbency. And we set up an independent commission. 30,000 people applied for the commission. It got whittled down. It represents the ethnic and cultural diversity of California. And suddenly, the districts are drawn. There aren't a whole bunch of lawsuits arguing this and that about the districts. And the districts represent a fair accounting of the texture of California. We'd like to see that good virus spread across the country.
How do you see changes from when you were in office until now in terms of people working together, crossing the aisle, making concessions, working with each other to solve problems?
When I served in Congress for 12 years, some of my best friends were Republicans. John Hines, Dick Schweiker, Jake Javits, Senator Brooks, a whole host of moderate to progressive Republicans in the House worked with moderate to progressive Democrats in the House and Senate, and put in place the Older Americans Act, Head Start, those issues. Once elected, there was much more collaboration and collegiality. We would fight like cats and dogs on the House floor, and then we'd go to dinner together. We formed caucuses together. I was co-chair with John Hines of the Energy and Environment Coalition. I was co-chair of another committee with former Republican Senator Jim Jeffords from Vermont. And there were a whole host of House members that we would collaborate with. And often I was fighting pork-barreling Democrats from the South and West. We were choosing up sides by ideology. Here's another important change. When I was serving, lobbyists were here. They would come to your office with talking points. The conservatives would come with their talking points. The liberals would come with their talking points. Every organization would come with talking points. They'd watch how you voted. And then after a year, they'd put a report card out. And my enemies, who hated the way I voted, they didn't bother me at all. They were out trying to get somebody to defeat me. They were giving legal political action committee money to them. My friends would come and say, Congressman, you're the best thing since sliced bread. Here's a legal contribution, and we want your picture on the front page of our newsletter so our constituents in labor and teachers and environmentalists and women and senior citizen groups could know what a great person you are. I ran for re-election, and I won by 50.001% of the vote, And that was because my district was the most Republican in the nation to have a Democratic congressman. My friends came back and said, without our help, you wouldn't have been elected. And I pulled my hair out, and, you know, they gave me another 10 issues. My enemies came back and said, we almost defeated you. Here are another 10 issues. The difference today is the talking points aren't important. They come with the checks first. Just 1 year ago when the Republicans took over the House, they had a fundraising dinner the night before, and they gave checks to all of the freshman congressmen that they had not supported in the campaign. Democrats did the same thing 2 years ago or 3 years ago when the Democrats took over. The day of the first session, John Dingell and a congressman from West Virginia held a breakfast for the freshman members, welcoming them, invited all of the special interest groups, and fortunately CNN was out filming this. Here are these guys bringing stacks of checks to hand out to the freshmen, so that their first foot in the door is to give the money so that they have access to come and lobby later. So we really need to find a way to push back on that. After all the reforms that Common Cause and all the good government groups want, including groups like Families USA, after all the reforms are put in place, we're going to need lobbyists. Lobbyists aren't the bad guys. It's lobbyists and money that form this toxic cocktail, and that's what we've got to stop.
Congressman, 2011 was a very contentious year at the state level. We saw some attacks on worker rights in Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, elsewhere. How did Common Cause respond to some of those attacks?
First thing we did was we went after David and Charles Koch, the Koch brothers, who had been having secret meetings. We did that in January of last year. And had we not done that, they might not have been exposed in Wisconsin, where they were the largest contributor to Governor Walker in Wisconsin. We were delighted when we saw the street theater and the street movements that were taking place across the country, which eventually in October ended up in the Occupy movement. And we support the general idea of occupying democracy and trying to get democracy on the plate of particularly the young adults who feel that government has simply gone over to corporate America. And we've tried to educate people, and we hope that the energy that was built pushing back on the anti-labor, anti-union events that started in Wisconsin, that energy will inform average ordinary citizens to get informed, to get involved, and to take back democracy.
How do you see the 2012 election shaping up?
Well, there's good news about the bad news. The bad news is money is going to flood the system. Money is going to corrode the system. But the good news about that is we're all going to be so offended at super PACs, what they did to Romney and Gingrich in the Republican primary. That's just the baby step of millions of dollars. When you have President Obama raising $1 billion to get reelected, and we think he should have pushed for reform of the presidential public financing system. And failing to do that, he's out raising $1 billion. The other side's going to raise $2, $3, $4 billion. It's all going to go on television. Some of it will be regulated. Some of it will be transparent. But a lot of it will be secret money. And I think average citizens, if they're able to energize themselves around Occupy movements, they're going to be so offended by the airways being bought off by negative ads that we can begin to have a conversation not only about a constitutional amendment, but trying to get a legitimate election system together where people of all political persuasions can get elected and serve the public interest.
Our good friend Bob Edgar, former congressman from Pennsylvania and president and CEO of Common Cause, thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. It's good to be with you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, former Clinton White House senior staffer Bob Wiener will discuss the value of public service.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by our good friend Bob Wiener. Bob is a former senior staffer in the Clinton White House, among a number of other hats that he's worn throughout government. Bob, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jason. And it's just a pleasure always to be with you. And we had talked off air. I really hope that one of the messages that comes out of not only this conference, but all that we're doing is the joy of working in the government, in contrast to the negativity that's out there from people being cynical and trying to damn government workers. I've had the privilege of working, as you know, for Claude Pepper as his chief of staff. We abolished mandatory retirement. Charlie Rangel, John Conyers, who I worked for before I went to the Clinton White House, Ted Kennedy, and then in the White House for Bill Clinton and General McCaffrey. These are some great people, and I would urge everyone out there, especially, you know, I was the first youth vote director for the Democratic Party at the Watergate, and I've you know, sort of gone from Watergate to Whitewater. I'd urge everybody to make a point of it. These things don't happen just because, you know, somebody else does it and you can't be part of it. It happens because you apply for a job, you push, you make the phone calls, you send your resume, you follow up, you make more phone calls. It took 6 months until I got my first job at the Watergate with the DNC. So I'd urge everybody to do that, urge your kids to do that, and to enjoy the thrill of being part of the government and of having some impact in policy, where, you know, I've had some impact on from Social Security to the youth vote, and to drug policy and crime and government defense contracting and so forth. You can have some enormous impact if you make a point of applying and being part of public service, and it's a really thrilling career to get into.
Bob, how important is it to get that message out there through people like you? I mean, I'm looking down at your roster, and you've got Pepper, Rangel, Conyers, Clinton, General McCaffrey, all of these positions that you've held, all of these important roles that you have held in government. How important is it to let people know the value that government is?
Well, it's really important, especially in view of the cynicism that's in the Congress today and the obstructionism that's there. That's not the reason for public service. The reason for public service is to get something done and to compromise, which, by the way, used to happen before Gingrich. And then he came in and rocked the boat, and ever since it's been partisan. You know, Medicare and Social Security, Jason, happened. There were arguments, some of the same kinds, but they had 60 to 80 votes. The Civil Rights Act, 60 to 80 minority votes. And then Obama comes in with the health bill and gives 160 amendments to the Republicans for tax breaks. In any other era, that would have gotten 60 to 80 minority votes as a proper compromise. But these guys are so obstructionist in trying to make the message against a president who's trying to get something positive done that they'll do anything, give up their souls in order to try to get their politics accomplished. That's not why I went into public service. And that's not why I would urge all of our listeners to go into public service. Let's correct this mess by getting you all out there as listeners into public service and doing the right thing, which is to get something done for the country.
Bob, you bring up a great point about health care. Let's talk a little bit about that. Here we are today at the 2012 Health Action Now conference by Families USA. Tell me a little bit about where we are today compared to a year ago when we talked.
Well, you remember, Jason, that it was Radio Row that we made the point that we didn't want a 60-vote rule in the Senate. We wanted to go to the 50-vote, which we called sequestration because we had the technical opportunity of a budget bill that it was a big part of. So we were able to do that. You remember that, you know, and I'll damn my own party as well as any other. It was Reid and Rahm and the White House that were saying we had to go to 60. So in this Radio Row, we ran around and we said, tell Reid, call Reid and the phone number and call Rahm and the phone number at the White House, who was then chief of staff, and tell them we want a 50-vote margin so we can pass this health care bill because the Republicans are doing nothing but obstructing it. And thousands of calls came in from the 20 stations that are here in this kind of a Radio Row, and it took 1 week. It was kind of like the computer thing that just happened, the internet thing that just happened. It took 1 week for them to reverse and say, we'll go to sequestration, we'll go to a 50-vote rule instead of a 60, and the health care bill passed and became law. But the Republicans are still trying to kill it. They still want to stop it. And to me, it's astounding that the debate moderators have just allowed the candidates to say they'll repeal Obamacare and never ask them what they do about the 2.5 million kids that are receiving care on their parents' plans, that half of Americans have pre-existing conditions that are now covered by the bill, that 50 million seniors are having more of their life-saving drugs covered under the donut hole that's going to disappear now, that preventive medicine's covered, that people are for the first time covered for life, and that without the bill, there would be 30 million people without health insurance, which all the studies, and most recently Harvard, say would die sooner. So what, the Republicans want to just give all that away? We're not going to let them, but the Supreme Court might allow it. But we're not going to let them do it in the Congress. We've got to keep the Congress, the House, turn it over. We've got to keep the Senate, and we got to get Obama reelected to make sure this happens.
AFGE's Inside Government here with Bob Wiener, the former Clinton White House senior staffer. Bob, are you comfortable with where the health care bill is today in its implementation?
Well, they're doing the best that they can, given that there had to be a compromise, and Obama did compromise to get this bill through. It's through the private insurance companies, except for the Medicaid provisions, but the rest of it is not single payer. Jim Clyburn's one of the few who realized when he said on MSNBC that there is a single payer in the bill, and it's the Medicaid expansion, and that's 30 to 50 million people. But aside from that, it's through the private profit insurance companies, and that's why we have we're in the 40s in life expectancy and infant mortality in this country. We don't have the best, and we're spending twice as much because we're paying the insurance companies for nothing. But the bill does force now that benefits have to be 85% of what you get, and the only 15% can go for overhead. The insurance companies hate that. They hate that there can be regulation of the premium amount. So the bill does an enormous amount. It provides coverage, but it isn't the best system we can get. Ultimately, we will have to go to what every other country does, and that's a single-payer system. Why should you not have health care as a right in this country? That's a clear message. Obama would have done it if he thought he could have gotten the votes. There are some of us who thought that actually the votes were there with 52 or 53 in the Senate and a majority in the House to go to single payer. But the calculation by the White House was that it had to go to the private insurance plan. And if you remember, by the way, that was the debate between President Obama and Hillary. Hillary would have gone to a single payer, and Obama wanted to do the private insurance mechanism as a compromise. That was the difference in them. And so we are where we are. It's an enormous plus. It is, all those provisions of kids on their plans and no lifetime caps and no pre-existing conditions, that's an enormous plus. And the Republicans want to take all that away and bureaucratize it. And Romney finally, this is the first time he said it last night in the debate, finally said that they would at least do a separate bill if they were to repeal it. But we ain't going to let them go that far.
Bob, as we look forward to 2014, what is the single most important thing to do to ensure full implementation?
You know, I'm a big one on public, that's why I got into public service, on public intervention and public involvement. And when you have a Supreme Court with Alito, Roberts, Thomas, Kennedy, and Scalia, all programmed to vote 5-4 against anything like Citizens United, they come in with putting corporations in charge of politics and Bush v. Gore. When you have a court that does that, and it's based because they think those are the signal issues that are their appointers' desires, and they're appointed. You know, we don't have a court with people in robes who are patriotic, who believe so much for the country. We have people who respond to their interests as well. And when you have that, and when you have Clarence Thomas, whose wife takes money, and the Thomases are in direct conflict of interest and should recuse himself, but you have those kinds of five people that are going to go 5-4, I'm very worried about what the Supreme Court can do. But just like we did in the computer, in the internet thing, the public can intervene and scare the hell out of policymakers, and the Supreme Court are policymakers. So I'm hopeful that people will call the Supreme Court, call the offices of Alito, Roberts, Thomas, Kennedy, and Scalia, and give them thousands of calls and thousands of letters and thousands of petitions, and make them realize that they, in their richness and their robes and their elitism, shouldn't be the ones saying that the rest of the country shouldn't have health care when they rule.
Bob, two questions for you. One, do you think Romney is the Republican nominee?
I think that the tracking is showing that it's now a dead heat, or Gingrich is slightly ahead in the polls in South Carolina, but he's run such an inept campaign that he couldn't even get on the ballot in Virginia, and he's got problems in half the states, that it probably will be Romney. They're going to be limping in with Romney, but then you got a guy who, as you know, lets Detroit go bankrupt, he says, let housing hit bottom. Thinks corporations are people, thinks $375,000 isn't much money, or you can choose the party of the child janitor and the wife swapper, which is Gingrich. I mean, you can pick one. They both have really flawed nominees. So I think it's going to be Romney, but if it's Gingrich, we're going to be happy running against either one.
Second question, what's the key issue for the presidency?
I think it's the economy, and I think it's the fact that the debate moderators, whether it's foreign policy, whether they never ask if the Republicans have any real alternative that would have succeeded as Obama did in taking down bin Laden, al-Awlaki, and Gaddafi, and reversed the Bush bleeding of 750,000 jobs a month, rescued the auto industry and the nation's financial institutions, and put the country back to 22 straight months of increased jobs. I think that's the key, is the economy. And the Republicans want nothing, a 95-year-old friend told me, but tax breaks for their rich buddies. And so it's that versus what Obama has done and will continue to do to try to help the economy.
Our good friend Bob Wiener, former Clinton White House senior staffer. Come back and see us again soon, Bob.
Thanks, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack will highlight the Health Action 2012 conference.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. Joined now by Ron Pollack, the Executive Director of Families USA. Ron, welcome back to the program.
Delighted to be with you again.
And thank you for having us here at your great event, Health Action Now 2012. Tell us a little bit about what's happened.
Well, we're all getting ready for the challenge of 2012. Obviously, now that the Affordable Care Act has been passed into law, we are working hard with advocates all across the country to make sure that the legislation gets implemented effectively state by state. Obviously, we've got some challenges with respect to the Supreme Court, and the granddaddy of them all is the November elections.
What's your analysis of how things have gone so far. Are you pleased with the implementation?
You know, I think Secretary Sebelius and her team at the Department of Health and Human Services have done extraordinary work. This is really a difficult task because we're making improvements in America's healthcare system state by state. And to keep that on track and to do it effectively is a really difficult task. And, of course, doing this in the context of a very contentious political debate that's going on, I think that the Department of Health and Human Services is doing a wonderful job. There's a great team under the secretary, so I'm very pleased with it. Now, obviously, much of the action is at the state level, and even among the red states and the states that have sued to try to block the different provisions of the Affordable Care Act, a lot of those states are actually moving forward. And remember, some of these states, they're not going to necessarily want the federal government to implement it if they've failed to do so. So I think things are moving forward rather well. There's a lot of work to be done. And the folks here at the conference, they are, you know, some of the key advocates who are trying to make sure that this gets implemented in as robust a form as possible.
You had mentioned that we are in a contentious political environment, and obviously later this year we'll be in the midst of a presidential election, among some other very important elections as well. Can you talk about the complexities in the middle of this political environment?
Well, so the law is a reality. Now the question is the implementation. So you've got a number of conservative governors who don't want to appear like they are helping out the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which, by the way, I think the president is going to wear as a badge of distinction as people get to see the benefits of this. And so a lot of political leaders in states, for political reasons, are actually not doing the kind of stuff that they might otherwise do, and certainly publicly they don't want to be seen doing it. Behind the scenes, however, in many of the states, even with these red states, the work has moved going forward, and that's terrific.
Ron, of course, last year in 2011 we saw the initial implementation of the law, but we have some more that's coming down the pipeline in 2014. What are you looking forward to then?
Well, as you're absolutely right, we've got some very significant things that have already been implemented. Children with pre-existing conditions are being protected from denial of coverage from an insurance company. Young adults are getting coverage on their family plan, and 2.5 million people have already received the benefit of that. Seniors are getting the benefit of preventive care for free, no deductibles, no copays, and those who have high drug costs, they're getting help. Small businesses are getting help. So there are a lot of things that are already in line. Now, with respect to the other stuff, this is really how the stuff that happens in 2014 is how we expand coverage for the tens of millions of people who don't have coverage today. We're going to see tax credit subsidies for people who are middle income. It goes up to 400% of the federal poverty level for a family of four. That's about $90,000 in income. You have income below that, you'll get a tax credit subsidy. Family of three, under $75,000. So this reaches deeply into the middle class. And we will see an expansion of the Medicaid program for the poorest of the poor. And some of the protections that now exist, like for kids, the pre-existing condition can't be a basis for exclusion of coverage. That will now extend to adults. So there's a lot that I think people will cherish.
What's your favorite part of the law?
Well, my favorite part of the law is I believe in health equity, and you know that we should not be rationing health care based on ability to pay. And when people are working hard in jobs, but it doesn't pay very much, and they can't afford to buy insurance, and they're working for a small business, and that small business can't afford coverage, I'm really glad that help is being provided. So people who work hard, play by the rules, but just can't afford health coverage will now be able to afford it for the first time.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Ron Pollack, Executive Director of Families USA. Ron, one of the key parts of this whole thing is that while it has been a contentious debate and there have been many different arguments around it, this law has real impacts on real people. Talk a little bit about those things and what they do mean to people.
Well, you know, as we're seeing, as the costs of health care keep on rising, it means people who are in jobs, who may at one point have had health coverage through their work, you know, a lot of employers are saying, I can't sustain that. Now, even if they do sustain that, it means less salary for working families. So when small businesses get help and they get tax credit subsidies, when individuals who are in a job that doesn't provide coverage and they can't afford it and they get help, this is going to make a big difference. It's going to save lives, and it's going to mean that people don't have to keep on juggling, paying for the rent, buying food, and making sure they get health care when they need it. So this is extraordinary. And, you know, what's incredible is our nation spends a whole lot more for health care per capita and in totality than any other nation in the world. The next nearest country, Norway, spends 49% less than we do in the United States, and yet we have 50 million people who are uninsured. So I am glad that we are now taking a giant step to fix that, and we have to cherish that and make it work as well as possible.
Ron, what are Families USA's top priorities in 2012?
We've got three top priorities. Number one is to make sure that state by state, the Affordable Care Act gets implemented as effectively in as robust a fashion as possible. Number two, we want to make sure that the nine folks a few blocks from here in the Supreme Court don't cause any disrepair to the Affordable Care Act. And number three, we want to make sure that the Affordable Care Act is a political asset rather than a liability, because we do know that if President Obama is reelected, it means we're actually going to go forward with health care reform. If he does not win, it not only means that the Affordable Care Act is in jeopardy and might be repealed, but we're going to go backwards. We're going to go backwards on Medicare. We're going to go backwards on Medicaid. And, you know, we want to move forwards. It's not a good thing to go back. So those are the three biggest challenges, and all of those challenges are best met by making sure that as many people around the country understand what's in this legislation, and we sort out fact from fiction and try to deal with a mythology that a lot of politicians have offered purely for partisan reasons.
Do you find when you talk to people around the country that once they learn a little bit about the law, they become more accepting of it if they weren't accepting of it already?
You know, if you look at all the surveys, what you're going to see is you ask, well, would you like to see this improvement in America's healthcare system or that improvement or the following improvement? And you know, they poll off the charts very positively, but people don't know these things are in the Affordable Care Act. And so our job is to make sure that these things that they cherish, these things that are so important to them, that people understand that this is in this historic health reform legislation that is going to help them.
Ron Pollack, Executive Director of Families USA, thank you for your time.
Thank you to our guests this week, United States Surgeon General Dr. Regina Benjamin, former Congressman Bob Edgar, former Clinton White House Senior Staffer Bob Wiener, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members.
The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource.